I held fast to an overhead bar as the elevated train I rode in swayed side to side, rocketing into Manhattan from the Bronx. When it dove beneath the Harlem River, everything outside the car went dark, and I caught a reflection of myself in the window. A ballooned afro, pork chop sideburns, a blue zoot suit with red pinstripes, a fire engine red turtleneck, a trench coat with its collar turned up. A half hour later, I strutted from the subway through the light rain hanging over Wall Street, humming the theme song to the film Shaft, which I'd seen the night before. I fancied myself as the movie's black hero, about to engage in battle with the white troops of injustice arrayed before me. I entered one of the skyscrapers, squeezed into the financial district, and took an elevator to a higher floor. There, stenciled in blue, the sign on the glass doors read, IBM, and beneath it in white, New York Financial Office. I grasped the door handle, but paused, catching another glimpse of myself in the glass door pane. I shook my head, unsure of what to make of this decision, unready to push through those glass doors, uncertain of what fate awaited me on the other side of the threshold. On that fall day in 1971, I was young and black, defiant and angry, and more than ever determined not to be like my father. Yet there I stood, about to report for work at IBM, where he'd worked for 25 years. When I finally pushed through the double doors, conversation stopped. The whiz-peck-whiz of Selectric typewriters fell silent. Many heads turned toward the teenager with the huge afro, who now stood inside their doors. For an instant, I held hostage some 50 men in white shirts and ties, cradling telephone headsets, and a dozen female secretaries with their fingers perched on typewriter keys. I scanned the room for black faces, but found only three. Two men immersed in a sea of white faces at the center, and a young woman at work as a secretary to my left. Art Conrad, the branch manager, stood abruptly when I entered his office. He embodied what I came to call the IBM manager's look. A man who could have played football in college. Tall, broad-shouldered, square-jawed, solidly built, and white. He reached down to shake my hand. IBM dress code, he said. I didn't reply. Conrad trained an intense stare on me, but I held my silent ground and returned his stare. At last, he seemed to finally relent. I'm supposed to give you this. He handed me a small, open box containing a silver pen and pencil set nestled in cotton. Thanks. I headed toward the door. Ford. I spun back around. Take any empty seat. He pointed toward the open floor. You won't be here long. Excuse me? His devilish grin now seemed to be payback for my previous silence. Class, he said. You'll be in class for the better part of a year. I can only imagine his first entries in my employee file. I took a seat partially hidden by one of the large pillars that supported the floor above. I had not been seated long when my telephone rang.
I like the way you look,
the female voice said. She hung up. I swung around to the secretarial pool, but no one looked back. Soon after, a black man casually made his way to my desk. He sat on the edge and leaned over. Name's Harold, he said. Harold Brown. Clyde Ford. Listen, Clyde. You want to do well in this company? Take some advice. Suit? Lose it. Get a plain suit, dark blue or gray. Normal length, no wide lapels. Wear a white shirt, maybe light blue shirt. Red or a blue tie. You want to be different? Try a three-piece suit, a button-down shirt or a dotted tie. Harold pulled up a pant leg. Dark socks, black or dark brown shoes. He looked at my afro and pork chop sideburns, ran a hand through his crew cut, and smoothed the sides of his face.
Man, I don't know what to tell you about all of that hair. It's embarrassing. You just don't get it, do you? You're working for IBM now.